طيب بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Okay, today this is our first session. Session number one. We are reading from Lessons in Arabic Language, Book 2, Dr. Fahd Ibrahim, Islamic University, Medina. And this is what we have entitled a preview of the Medina Book 2 Intermediate Arabic Grammar course. Just briefly, so that we can be clear on what is the intent, what is the objective and the purpose of this course. This course is not intended as a complete study of Medina Book 2. Rather, it is intended primarily to assist and to aid and to prepare those students who have completed Medina Book 1 and are intending to go to Medina Book 2. What I have found over the past 7 or 8 years in teaching English speaking people the Arabic language, I have found that many students do fairly well or very well in Medina Book 1. And then they become overwhelmed by the transfer from level 1 to level 2. They become overwhelmed by the amount of vocabulary and the number of points of grammar that are covered in the Medina Book 2. Yani, in every lesson, yani, the number of grammatical points is far greater, generally speaking, than it is at Medina Book 1, and the vocabulary is also greater. So, I have found that many people, again, who do well in Medina Book 1 find great difficulty in transferring to Medina Book 2. So, what we decided to do this time with those students, primarily, who have completed Medina Book 1 with us, in order to prepare them better for Medina Book 2, we decided to do a preview of Medina Book 2. And what is intended here is to acquaint you, number one, with the vocabulary, and number two, with the grammar contained in the first half of the Medina Book 2 course. We will not cover the exercises in Medina Book 2. We will not cover the exercises. We will not go through the exercises. Rather, those exercises will be done at a future date when we actually intend and prepare to cover the Medina Book 2. Right now, this is just a preview. So the objective is to prepare you for a later full study of Medina Book 2 by giving you a preview of the grammar and giving you an opportunity to memorize as much of the vocabulary as is possible before actually entering into the full study of Medina Book 2. So each week, inshallah, we will preview the grammar and the vocabulary for one chapter, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. Yani, unless we find that the vocabulary and the grammar is yani not enough for a full session, then we might look at a second chapter. But basically, our intent is to try to cover one chapter each week until we complete the first half of the book, which includes, among other things, a complete analysis and full examination of the past tense verb, the present tense verb, the imperative or command form of the verb, and many, many other points of grammar. So today is the beginning of this course, the 3rd of Dhul Qa'dah, the 13th of June, 2021. Yani in the Hijri calendar, we're in the year 1442, yani after the Hijra. So today is the first day of the course. This is our first session. And the time for this course beginning, inshallah, is going to be 1:45 p.m., that is, yani in the United States, New York City time. Okay, the time is going to be the time that based upon the time in the United States in New York City. Okay, so we are not in Saudi Arabia, we are not in the Gulf countries, we are not in England. Rather, we are doing this broadcast from the United States. So the time 1:45 is New York time, and the ending of the class will be 1 hour and a half, 3:15, unless we finish early, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala. Okay, so that being said, understanding the purpose of this course, that it is intended as a preview. This is not a full study of Medina Book 2. It is merely a preview of the vocabulary and the grammatical points for each lesson for the first half of the book. Okay, so after we complete this preview, inshallah, then we will be offering the full study of Medina Book 2 for anybody who would like to join us. Our intent, again, is just to preview the grammar and vocabulary. We hope that everybody will take advantage of this opportunity, if you intend to study Medina Book 2 later, to try to memorize as much of the vocabulary now as is possible, so that when you enter into the full study of Medina Book 2, and you won't have the burden of trying to memorize a lot of vocabulary words with each lesson, and likewise the grammatical points, you'll be acquainted with them, you'll be familiar with them. Many of them you will know well already, so the study of Medina Book 2 will be a lot easier, and hopefully we'll have a greater success rate with those who will complete the course. Yani when we enter into the full study of Medina Book 2 at some future time. Okay, so that being said, let's move into first and foremost, and the first part of this session is going to be a complete examination of the English key, the grammatical points in the English key for lesson number 1. That's on page 1, 2, 3, and 4 of the English key. And then the vocabulary is on the bottom of page 4 and 5. We're going to look at that next. Okay, so this particular lesson, just to give you an overview, this particular lesson has 6 grammatical points. Usually, as we found in book 1, those of you who are familiar with the way we have presented this class, usually the first point or the first couple of points are going to be the core, most important points of the lesson. Okay, so there are 6 points. So generally speaking, the first point or the first couple of points are going to be the most important. And that doesn't mean the others are not important, but relatively speaking, some points are going to be more important than others. So there are 6 points. The first point is going to be inna, the particle inna. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Inna wa akhawatuha. Inna and the sisters of inna. In this lesson we're going to take, the second point will be one of the sisters of inna, la'alla. Additionally, in this lesson we're going to deal with the word dhu, which means sahib, or the one having or possessing something. We're going to deal with the conjunction m, which means or, and the contrast between m and au, both of them meaning or and having different usages. And then we're going to deal with the numbers alf and mia, 1,100. And finally, we're going to deal with the expression ghalin, which is the ism manqus. We're going to study that in detail in level 3. But in any case, we're going to look at, yani, just briefly, this type of expression. Okay, like the word ghalin, which means yani, expensive. So this is the overview of what we're going to cover in this English key. 6 points. There are also 16 new words. If you look at the vocabulary bank for Medina Book 2 that we have shared with the class, you'll see there are more than 16 words for Lesson 1. And that's because, please note, that the vocabulary bank is an attempt to present all the words in that particular lesson, not just the new words. So you might find 2 or 3 pages of vocabulary in the vocabulary bank for a particular lesson, while in the lesson itself we find yani, the vocabulary for that particular lesson might be only 10 or 15 or 20 words. So the difference here is that in the lesson in the English key, basically you're going to find the words that are in the vocabulary at the end of the English key are primarily the new words for this particular lesson. Primarily they are new words. In the vocabulary bank, we'll find that there are many words that are not new, but they are contained in this particular lesson. So the vocabulary bank can be a good reference. If you have forgotten some words that we had before, generally speaking, you'll find them in the vocabulary bank. As far as in the English key, you're only going to find the words that are new words. This lesson also contained 13 exercises. We are not going to be doing the exercises. Okay, so 1 week, inshallah, every week we're going to try to cover one lesson, looking at the grammatical points as detailed as possible, looking at the vocabulary words as well, and we're also going to read the text at the beginning of the lesson from the Arabic part of the book. We're going to read the text at the beginning of the lesson so that we can see the vocabulary and the grammatical points in a normal context, yani in a discussion, in a hawar, between 2 or more people. So we will be reading the Arabic text at the beginning of the lesson, in the Arabic section of the book, starting on page 5. And in this particular lesson, we're going to look at one exercise. That's exercise number 3, because it shows us how to use the particle inna, which is the first point of this lesson. It shows us how to connect it to pronouns. Okay, it shows us how to connect the particle inna to pronouns and how the form of the pronoun changes, yani, when it is a connected pronoun as opposed to when it is an unconnected pronoun. So we'll see that huwa becomes hu, and hiya becomes ha, and anta becomes ka, and anti becomes ki, and so on. We'll see the mansub forms of the pronoun, yani, that are in exercise number 3 on page 7 of the Arabic section of the book. So in this particular lesson, we're going to look at one exercise, and that's just so that we can see how to use inna with the pronouns and what form of the pronoun we will use with it when we use the connected pronoun. Okay, so let's go now to the first page of the English key for lesson number 1. Again, there are 6 points, and usually the most important point is the first one, or the first couple of points are usually the most important. So at the top of the page it says lesson 1. In this lesson, we learn the following. Point number 1. Inna. Yani, this is the first thing that we're going to learn in this lesson. Now, in Arabic, there are 2. Yani, in order to understand the use of inna, we have to review. Some information related to the 2 types of sentences in Arabic. Okay, so in order to explain the use of inna, we're going to explain the 2 types of sentence and which type of sentence is used with inna. Okay, so in Arabic there are 2 types of sentences. A, the nominal sentence known as al-jumla al-ismiya, and B, the verbal sentence known as al-jumlatu al-fi'liya. Okay, so we're going to explain both of these 2 types of sentences briefly, and then we're going to mention that one type of sentence, inna, is only used with one of those 2 types of sentences. Okay, so the first type of sentence that we had in book 1 was the nominal sentence. Yani, a nominal sentence is a sentence that begins with a noun. In Arabic, it's called al-jumla al-ismiya, because it begins with an ism. Ism is a noun. So the nominal sentence, which begins with a noun, or in Arabic begins with an ism, is known as al-jumla al-ismiya. And this is a sentence, the jumla ismiya, wherein the first word is a noun. For example, al-kitabu sahlun, the book is easy. This sentence, al-kitabu sahlun, begins with a noun. Therefore, it's called in English a nominal sentence. It begins with an ism, and therefore in Arabic it's called a jumla ismiya. The noun which commences the nominal sentence, it's called the mubtada, yani al-mubtada'u. The first word, the noun that begins a nominal sentence, is technically known as al-mubtada'u. While the second part of the nominal sentence is called al-khabaru. Okay, so the nominal sentence, how do we define it? It's a sentence that begins with a noun. It's composed of 2 essential parts. The first word is the mubtada'u. In English, that's called the subject. The second word is the khabar. And in English, that's called the predicate. Okay, so in English, you have subject and predicate. In Arabic, we have al-mubtada'u and al-khabaru. Al-mubtada'u is from ibtada'a, yani from bada'a, to begin. It's the word that we begin the sentence with. And al-khabar, yani, means news or information. That is the information that we want to tell about the word that we began the sentence with. So the subject is al-mubtada'u. What we want to say about it is al-khabaru. That's the first type of sentence, the nominal sentence. That's what we began with in book 1. هذا كتاب, هذا مكتب, مبتدأ and خبر, يعني الجملة الإسمية. The second type of sentence in Arabic is the verbal sentence, known in Arabic as الجملة الفعلية. الجملة Al-fi'liyatu. It's a verbal sentence because it begins with a verb. Or in Arabic we say, it is a jumla fi'liya because it begins with a fi'l. This type of sentence, the first word is a verb. For example, kharaja bilalun, meaning Bilal went out. Kharaja bilalun. It begins with a fi'l, so it's a jumla fi'liya. So these are the two types of sentences in Arabic. Again, jumla ismiya begins with a ism, a noun. Jumla fi'liya begins with a fi'l, a verb. So, in reference to inna, the particle inna, it is used at the beginning of a nominal sentence. It's not used with a verbal sentence. It's only used with the nominal sentence, the sentence that begins with a noun, with a ism. This particular particle, and I'm not reading from the book now, I'm just making a note here. This particular particle in Arabic is known as harf tawkid wa nasb. Harf tawkidin wa nasbin. Yani a particle of tawkid because it's used for emphasis. And nasbin because it makes the noun connected to it mansub. It places it in the accusative case. So inna is harf, yani tawkid, it's used for emphasis, and it's harf, nasb, it makes the noun connected to it, mansub. And likewise, we say that the other noun, the khabar, or the khabaru inna, is marfu'un. So the ism of inna is going to be mansub in the accusative case, and the khabar of inna is going to be marfu'un in the nominative case. Okay, going back to the book. The particle inna is used at the beginning of a nominal sentence. For example, if we had a nominal sentence, al-kitabu sahalun. That's a nominal sentence. It begins with a noun. A jumla ismiya begins with an ism. Al-kitabu sahalun. Al-kitabu is the mubtada, and we know from book 1 that the mubtada is always marfu'un. Sahalun is the khabar. And we know that the khabar is always marfu'un, yani in the nominative case. And the sign, the primary sign of a noun being marfu'un is dhamma. So we see al-kitabu, yani marfu'un with dhamma, and sahlun, also marfu'un with dhamma. That's a nominal sentence. Now if we want to emphasize the meaning of this sentence by using the particle of emphasis, the harf tawkid, so we use inna, and we say inna, الكتاب سهل. Indeed, the book is easy. Or verily, surely, certainly, definitely, the book is easy. Okay, inna emphasizes that meaning. الكتاب سهل, the book is easy. I want to emphasize that. Indeed, the book is easy. So I use inna. So what happens here? The الكتاب, the مبتدأ, once you use inna, it's no longer known as mubtada. We will see the note here after this sentence. It says, note that the noun after inna, the noun that's connected to inna, the noun that was the mubtada, is mansub. That is in the accusative case. Inna al-kitaba. After the introduction of inna, the mubtada'u, the subject, is no longer called mubtada'u, but is instead called ismu inna. The noun of inna. And the khabar of the original sentence is now called khabaru inna. Okay, so the mubtada and khabar, after the introduction of inna to the sentence, the mubtada becomes ismu inna and the khabar becomes khabaru inna. Alright, so what we are seeing here then is that the noun, the ism inna, the noun that's connected to inna, usually it's the noun that immediately follows inna, but not always. But that's the general rule, that the noun that immediately follows inna, the that was originally the mubtada, is now known as ism inna, it's going to become mansub, and the khabar is going to remain marfu'un. So the ism inna is mansub, accusative case, and the khabar of inna is marfu'un in the nominative case. After the introduction of inna, the mubtada, now known as ismu inna, becomes mansub, and the khabar, yani known as khabaru inna, remains marfu'un. After this it says, inna signifies emphasis. In Arabic it's called tawkid. Inna signifies emphasis. It can be translated as indeed, surely, no doubt, verily, and so on. Note the following. If the mubtada has one dhamma in the original sentence, like al-kitabu has a single dhamma, if it has one dhamma, it changes to one fatha after inna. Yani it changes from dhamma to fatha, but if it originally had only one dhamma, it becomes one fatha. But if the mubtada has two dhammas in the original sentence, then they change to two fatha. Okay, so it changes from dhamma to fatha. If it was a single dhamma, it becomes a single fatha. If it was a double dhamma, it becomes a double fatha. Alright? Okay. The example that they gave us here with the single dhamma, they said, Al-mudarrisu jadidun. The teacher is new. Al-mudarrisu has a single dhamma. Al-mudarrisu is the mubtada. After inna, it's going to become ismu inna. But it has a single dhamma originally. Al-mudarrisu jadidun. The teacher is new. After inna, inna al-mudarrisa jadidun. Indeed, certainly, surely, no doubt, the teacher is new. Here we see that in the original sentence, al-mudarrisu had a single dhamma. After inna, inna al-mudarrisa has a single fatha. And likewise, another example they gave us, aminatu talibatun. Aminatu talibatun. Amina is a female student. If we want to emphasize this statement and say, certainly, surely, no doubt, Amina is a female student, then we say, inna aminata talibatun. Inna aminata talibatun. Indeed, Amina is a female student. Okay, those are examples of the original, mubtada having a single dhamma, and after inna became ism inna with a single fatha. If the mubtada has two dhammas, yani tanween, they change to two fatha. For example, they gave us hamidun maridun. Hamidun is ill, is sick. Hamid is sick. Here the mubtada hamidun has a double dhamma. Double dhamma. When we use inna, when we introduce inna to the sentence, inna hamidan maridun. Here now it changes, yani after inna, the ism inna is mansub, so it changes to fatha. But because in the original sentence hamidun had a double dhamma, it changes now to a double fatha. Inna hamidan maridun. The ism of inna became mansub. Because it originally had a double dhamma, it becomes double fatha. The khabar of inna remains marfu'un, maridun. Okay, let's turn the page to page 2. And on the top of the page, it brings us two more points. If the mubtada is a pronoun, it changes to its corresponding mansub form. Yani if the mubtada of the sentence is a pronoun, it's not a clear noun, like in the sentences that we had before, Amina, Hamid, Al-Mudarris, these are all clear nouns. But if a pronoun was the mubtada, after inna, we don't keep that pronoun in its normal form, but it changes to the mansub form. So what do we mean? For example, the sentence, Anta ghaniyun. Anta ghaniyun. You are rich. If we want to emphasize the meaning of this sentence with inna, we don't say inna anta ghaniyun, because anta is the marfu'un form of the pronoun when it's nominative. Yani it's the subject of the sentence, the mubtada, so it's in the nominative form. But if we introduce inna, now the subject of the sentence, the mubtada, becomes ism inna. And ism inna, we just said, what? Has to be mansub. So pronouns have different forms. Yani they change from the marfu'un form to the mansub form when it is necessary. So here we see the pronoun anta. After the introduction of inna, we have to change it to the mansub form, which is ka. Yani anta became ka. And we'll see in exercise number 3 that anti became ki. And so on, like this. Okay, so we'll see the mansub forms are on page 7, exercise number 3. So here, the point that we're saying, if the mubtada is a pronoun, yani in the nominative case, as anta, anti, huwa, hiya, ana, nahnu, it has to change after the introduction of inna to the mansub form. Yani huwa becomes hu, hiya becomes ha, anta becomes ka, anti becomes ki, yani, and so on like this. So, all of the mansub forms of the pronouns, whenever the pronoun is in the position where it's supposed to be mansub, yani, in the mahalli nasb, then we have to use the mansub form of the pronoun. Whether it's because of inna or other than that, we use the mansub form of the pronoun in those cases, and the mansub forms of the pronoun are given in the main part of the book, the Arabic section of the book, for this lesson number 1, exercise number 3 on page 7. Exercise number 3 on page 7. So please refer to the mansub forms and learn them well, because when you use inna or any of the sisters of inna, inna or anna, la'alla, any of these sisters of inna, they all work the same way as inna. If you introduce it to a nominal sentence, the mubtada becomes the ism of inna or anna or la'alla, and if the mubtada is a pronoun, we have to now change the pronoun from the marfu'un form, the nominative form, to the mansub form, the accusative form. Okay, so if the mubtada is a pronoun, it changes to its corresponding mansub form. Anta ghaniyun becomes innaka ghaniyun. Feminine, same sentence, feminine. Anti ghaniyatun becomes innaki ghaniyatun. Okay? The last point related to inna. For the mansub forms of all the pronouns, see exercise number 3 in the main book. I just referred you to exercise number 3 on page 7. Note that when you go to exercise number 3 on page 7, note that the pronouns of the first person singular and the first person plural have two forms. So the first person singular, ana, the mansub form, is the ya al-mutakallim. So if you attach it to inna, you say inni, or you can say innani, yani with two noons. Inni, yani the particle inna plus ya al-mutakallam, inni, or you can say inna plus noon al-waqaya and ya al-mutakallam, innani, innani, inna plus ni. Ni here, the noon is Noon al-wiqaya, and ya is the first person singular pronoun. Yani, ya al-mutakallam represents ana. Okay, so the same thing for the plural, nahnu. Yani, in the mansub form, it's na. Noon fatta alif, na. So you can say inna, or you can use the noon al-wiqaya and say innana. Alright, so the direct form would be inni, yani for first person singular. Plural, inna, yani inni, indeed I, inna, indeed we. Or you can use the other form, innani or innana. So please make a note that the first person singular and the first person plural of the mansub forms of the pronouns, when they're in the position where they should be, mansub. Remember, all pronouns are mabniyun. All pronouns are mabniyun, meaning they are fixed. Yani, they don't change their vowel at the end because they change from being marfu'un to mansub to majrur. They don't change their vowel. But when they are in the position where they should be marfu'un, they have a form. The vowel doesn't change. It's just a certain form. Yani, you have huwa, hiya, anta, anti, ana, nahnu, and so on. When they're in the position or in the place, fi mahalli nas, where they should be mansub, then they have a different form. Not just vowel change. No, it is not vowel change. It's a completely different form. So, antum becomes kum. And antunna becomes kunna. And nahnu becomes na. And huwa becomes hu. And hiya becomes ha. And all of that is given to you in the chart in exercise number 3 on page 7 of the main Arabic part of the book. Okay, so that's the end of what we wanted to say concerning Inna. Inna is the most important part of this lesson, and I hope that whatever time we have taken to discuss this, that inshallah it is of benefit, because this is the core of the lesson, Inna. Okay? So, to summarize, there are two types of sentences in Arabic, the jumla ismiya, nominal sentence that begins with a ism, a noun, and the jumla fi'liya, the verbal sentence that begins with a fi'l or verb. Inna is only used with the nominal sentence, al-jumla al-ismiya. The jumla ismiya is composed of two essential parts, al-mubtada'u and al-khabaru, the subject and the predicate. When you introduce inna to that nominal sentence, the mubtada is now known as ismu inna, and it changes to being mansub in the accusative case with fatha. And the khabar of the sentence after the introduction of inna becomes khabaru inna, and the khabaru inna remains marfu'un. Primary sign of a word when it's marfu'un is dhamma. Also, we said that the meaning of inna is emphasis, tawkeed. That's why it's known as harf, tawkeed, wa nasb. Yani the particle, its meaning is emphasizing something or removing doubt. If anybody has doubt, you want to remove the doubt, you say inna. Certainly it is as I'm saying. And also it is, yani harf tawkeed and harf nasb, yani because it makes the mubtada, which now known as ism inna, it makes it become mansub in the accusative case, and the primary sign of a noun in the accusative case is fatha. We also said that if the mubtada, after the introduction of inna, if it originally had one dhamma, it becomes one fatha. If it had two dhammas, it becomes two fatha. And if the mubtada is a pronoun, we have to change the form of the pronoun to the mansub form of the pronoun. That's what we wanted to cover for the first point and the main point of this particular lesson. The second point is related to the first point, and that is number two. We're reading from page 2, point number 2, near the top of the page. La'alla. Lam fatha, ayn fatha, lam shadda fatha. La'alla. This is also a particle, like inna. And it's a harf, like inna. It is called one of the sisters of inna. Yani, from the akhawatu inna. Yani, sisters of inna, meaning it's a particle that works the same way like inna. All the rules that we said about inna are applicable to its sisters, to its akhawat. So the same rules that we just mentioned about inna, the same rules apply to la'alla. The only difference is that inna is used for emphasis, whereas la'alla has a different meaning. It signifies hope or fear, at-tarjih or al-ishfaq. At-tarjih means fear, hope. And al-ishfaq means fear. So it has two meanings. La'alla has two meanings. From the context of the sentence that it's used in, you know which meaning is intended. Again, point number two. La'alla, this is also a particle, a harf. And you remember that Arabic language is divided into three types of words. The ism, the fi'l, and the harf. So this is a harf. It is called one of the sisters of inna, and that's because grammatically it acts like inna. The difference is it signifies hope or fear. For example, these are two examples. An example for each of the two meanings. The first one, al-jawu jamilun. The weather is fine. So if we use la'alla in this sentence, we say la'alla al-jawwa jamilun. I hope the weather is fine. I hope the weather is fine. The second sentence, al-mudarrisu maridun. The teacher is sick. If we use la'alla, we say la'alla al-mudarrisa maridun. I am afraid, I fear that the teacher is sick. I fear that the teacher is sick. Then it says, in this lesson we have examples of I hope only. Yani they only have examples for one of the meanings of la'alla in this lesson. But know that la'alla has two possible meanings. At-tarjih, hope, and al-ishfaq, fear. The examples that they gave us, if you note, al-jaw jamilun, Note that al-jawu, the mubtada, is marfoon with dhamma. And the khabar is always marfoon with dhamma. The weather is fine. After la'alla, la'alla al-jawwa. Yani notice here that the mubtada after la'alla becomes ismu la'alla. And as ismu la'alla, like ism inna, became mansoob with fatha. Whereas the khabar of la'alla remains marfoon with dhamma. Here the meaning la'alla al-jawwa jameel means I hope that the weather is fine. Yani, how do you know that the meaning is I hope and not I fear? Generally speaking, from the context, a person is not going to say la'alla al-jaw jameelun. Yani, they're not going to mean by that I fear that the weather is fine. Nobody fears the weather being fine. So you know from the context that the meaning is here is not I fear the weather is fine, but I hope the weather is fine. Likewise, the second example, al-mudarrisu maridun, the teacher is sick. If you, when you introduce la'alla, la'alla al-mudarrisa. And here mudarrisu became mudarrisa because it is the ism la'alla and therefore it's mansoob. La'alla al-mudarrisa maridun. I'm afraid the teacher is sick. From the context, generally speaking, nobody is going to say la'alla al-mudarris maridun. Yani, I hope the teacher is sick. I hope nobody's going to say that. So we can understand from the context when somebody says la'alla al-mudarris maridun, they don't mean I hope, I wish that the teacher would be sick. No, they mean I fear that the teacher is sick. Yani the meaning la'alla al-mudarris maridun, akhafu an yakuna maridan. I fear that he will be sick. The same thing, la'alla al-jawwa jamilun, arju, I hope an takuna an yakuna, yani I hope an yakuna, yani jamil, jamil. I hope that the weather will be jamilan, yani will be fine. Yani la'alla means arju, yani at-tarji, hope. And it also means al-ishfaq, yani akhafu, yani fear, khawf. Okay, so this is what we wanted to say about la'alla. It's from the akhawatu inna. Its meaning is either hope or fear. It works like la'alla. It's only used with a jumla ismiya. The mubtada and khabar become known as now, become known as ismu la'alla and khabaru la'alla. Its ism, like ism inna, is going to be mansoob and its khabar is going to remain marfu'un. And the same thing happens, yani, if the mubtada has a single dhamma, yani, after la'alla, it becomes ism la'alla, it takes a single fatha. If it had a double dhamma, it becomes a double fatha. And also, if it's used with a pronoun, if the mubtada of the sentence is originally a pronoun, after la'alla, we have to change that pronoun from the marfu'un form, yani, to the mansub form. From nahnu to na, from ana to I, from huwa to hu. Yani, huwa maridun, la'allahu maridun. Alright, so please pay attention to the mansub forms of the pronoun, hu and ha and ka and ki and e and so on, yani from exercise number 3 on page 7 of this lesson. Okay, the third point of this lesson, we're still on page 2, is the word dhu. The third point is the word dhu. Let me just remind anybody who may have just joined us that this is a preview of Medina Book 2. It's a preview. We are not studying the entire book. We are not doing the exercises. We are primarily going to focus on the vocabulary, yani giving everybody a chance to become acquainted with the vocabulary before we go into the full study of Book 2. This is an introduction. We're going to try to become acquainted with the vocabulary during this period of time, study it as much as possible, and to become acquainted with the grammar of each lesson so that when we go into the full study of Medina Book 2, everybody will already be prepared, will be well prepared, and inshallah we'll find it a lot easier if we're already acquainted with the vocabulary and already acquainted with the grammatical rules. It's like if you studied Medina Book 1 and you go back to study it again, like for review, you're going to find it much easier now because you know most of the vocabulary, if not all of it, and you also will know most of the grammatical rules, if not all of them. So studying it again, yani reviewing it, is going to be easy. So here we're doing the opposite process. We're going to preview it before we study it in full so that we'll make the study of Medina Book 2 a little bit easier. And hopefully we'll have a greater success rate with those who will complete this Medina Book 2 when we study it in full. Okay, so again, we're doing point number 3, page number 2, lesson number 1, Medina Book 2. The third point is the word ذو. It says here, ذو, this word means having or possessing. Having or possessing. For example, ذو مالٍ, يعني مال means wealth. ذو مالٍ means possessing wealth. That is, يعني a person who is described as ذو مالٍ is a wealthy person. ذو خلقٍ, خلق means character or manners. So ذو, if a person is described as ذو خلقٍ, that means literally possessing manners, having good manners, or i.e. well-mannered, a well-mannered person. Likewise, ذو علمٍ means literally possessing knowledge. A person described as ذو علمٍ, for example, it means they are what? I.e., that is, a learned person. A learned person. ذو علمٍ, one who possesses knowledge, is a learned person. Sometimes you may say it is an عالم. عالم, يعني a learned person or scholar. In reference to this word, we say ذو, it is always مضاف. And it's always used as the first part of an idafa construction that we studied in book 1, lesson 5. Al-idafa, mudaf and mudaf and ilayh. Dhu is always only used as a mudaf. And the following word, the word after dhu is always going to be mudaf ilayhi. And therefore, that word following it, the mudaf ilayhi, will always be majroor. The primary sign of a word when it's majroor is kasra. So we're going to always see ذو used in an idafa construction. And the word following it, therefore, is always going to be مضاف إليه مجرور. Here, I want to stop for a minute, and then we'll come back to reading the book. I want to stop here and say that ذو, because it's not mentioned here, ذو is from what is known as الأسماء الخمسة. Okay? ذو is from what is known as الأسماء الخمسة. Yani the five special words in the Arabic language. The meaning of ذو is صاحب, yani the one who possesses or owns something. And it is always in إضافة, it is always the مضاف. However, the إعراب of ذو, the special إعراب of ذو as one of the أسماء الخمسة, is only when it is in its singular form. And its masculine singular form, ذو. It's only when it's in its masculine singular form that it is having the special rule of الأسماء الخمسة. What is the special rule of الأسماء الخمسة? A word, when it's from the أسماء الخمسة, if it's in إضافة, and ذو is always in إضافة, the others are not always in إضافة, but ذو is always in إضافة, when it is in إضافة, it has a special grammar rule, and that is, the sign of it being marfu instead of being dhamma is waw. And we'll see that in the examples here. The sign of it being majroor instead of kasra is the elongation of kasra, ya. Yeah. And the sign of it being mansoob instead of fatha is the elongation of fatha with alif. So, the sign of the i'rab for the asma al-khamsa, we're going to study that in detail later. The sign of the i'rab of the asma al-khamsa is, instead of dhamma, waw. Yani the letter that elongates it. Instead of kasra is ya, instead of fatha, it's alif. Alright? But this is only the case for ذو when it is in its singular masculine form. Not when it is plural, masculine plural, or feminine singular or feminine plural. Only in its masculine singular form. Let's go back to the book now. They said it is always مضاف and the following word is مضاف إليه and therefore it is مجرور. The feminine of ذو is ذاتو. ذاتو. That's the feminine singular. So, if it is something that is being described with ذو, that's masculine singular, you say ذو. If it's feminine singular, you say ذاتو. For example, بِلَالٌ ذو عِلْمٍ. Bilal is possessing knowledge. He's learned. وَأُخْتُهُ ذَاتُ خُلُقٍ. And his sister is possessing good manners. or character. She's well mannered. Okay, so ذو علمٍ, yani ذو is used to describe someone or something that is masculine singular, and ذاتو for feminine singular. The plural of ذو is ذاوو, and the plural of ذاتو is ذواتو. Okay, so there are four forms here. Yani masculine singular ذو, masculine plural ذاوو, feminine singular ذاتو, and feminine plural ذواتو. And then they give us yani four examples. هذا الطالب ذو خلق. This student is possessing character or well mannered. Plural, هؤلاء الطلاب ذو خلق. These students are possessors of character or well mannered. Feminine singular, هذه الطالبة ذات خلق. This female student is possessing good character or well mannered. Plural, feminine, هؤلاء الطالبات ذوات خلق. These female students are possessors of good character or well mannered. So these are the four forms for ذو: masculine singular and plural ذو, and ذو feminine singular and plural ذات and ذوات. Note in these sentences, though, very importantly, note that, for example, I'll give just one explanation and you can apply it to the others. هذا الطالب ذو خلق. هذا الطالب ذو خلق. The meaning is what? هذا الطالب, this student. ذو خلق is a possessor of character or manners. Yani is well mannered. In this sentence, this is a jumla ismiya. And it begins with a noun. هذا اسم إشارة is a noun. هذا is the مبتدأ. الطالب is what? And remember, the اسم إشارة followed by a noun, الف لام, is a بدل construction. So هذا is the مبتدأ. الطالب is the بدل. And the بدل has to have the same إعراب of the مبدل منه. So هذا is the مبتدأ. يعني it's مبنيون in the place where it should be مرفون. So الطالب has to also be مرفوعٌ. ذو is the خبر, and the خبر is always مرفوعٌ. But here we see the sign of it being مرفوعٌ is not دمّة, it's the واو. This is a secondary sign. Okay, that's what's special about the أسماء الخمسة. يعني the sign of the إعراب is a secondary sign. Instead of دمّة, if it's مرفوعٌ, it's واو. Instead of كسرة, if it's مجرور, it's ياء. And instead of فتّة, if it's منسوب, it's ألف. So you see here that ذو here is the خبر of this sentence, and خلقٍ is مضاف إليه مجرور. هذا is the مبتدأ, الطالب is the بدل. ذو is the خبر مرفون, the sign that is مرفون is واو. That's a secondary sign because this particular word is from الأسماء الخمسة. They have secondary signs for إعراب. So the same thing is applicable to the rest of these sentences. We see that in each one of these sentences, يعني ذو and ذاوو and ذاتو and ذواتو are all the خبر, and خبر is always مرفون, and we see that the sign of them being مرفون is the ضمة. يعني here though, يعني ذو, it has a special إعراب because it's from أسماء الخمسة. This is only applicable to its singular masculine form, not to the other forms of يعني this word. Okay, so in summary, the word ذو, it means possessing or having. It's always used in as a مضاف. The word following it is going to be the مضاف إليه, and it's going to be مجرور. ذو is from the أسماء الخمسة, therefore it has a special إعراب. يعني that إعراب is only used in its masculine singular form ذو, and that is when it is مرفون, the sign of it being مرفون is واو instead of ضمة. So when you say it's مرفون, you don't say علامة رفعه ضمة. Rather, علامة رفعه, the sign of it being مرفون, is واو. And that's because it's from the أسماء الخمسة. Okay, let's go to the next point. See how we're doing in time. Good, mashallah. The next point is number 4. We're still on page 2. The word M. يعني حمزة with فتح followed by ميم with سكون. It means or, O-R. But only in an interrogative sentence. Only in a sentence where you're asking a question. For example, أطبيب أنت أم مهندس؟
Are you a tabib, a doctor, or an engineer, a muhandis? At-tabibun anta am muhandisun? Another example. Amin Faransa huwa am min Almania? Yani, amin Faransa huwa, is he from France? Am min Almania, or from Germany? Is he from France or Germany? The third example they gave us, Abilalan Ra'ita am Hamidan? Was it Bilal that you saw, or Hamid? Yani, did you see Bilal or Hamid? Before we go on, what I want to note here is that in each of these sentences, you notice that there are two choices. Are you a doctor or an engineer? Is he from France or Germany? Did you see Bilal or Hamid? Okay, there are two choices. This kind of sentence where Hamzatul Istifham is used to ask a question of a choice between two things, this is known as Hamza At-Ta'yin. At-Ta'yin. Yani ta'ayn ya ya noon. At-Ta'yin. Yani, meaning the Hamza of specification. Yani, you're asking a question about is it this or that? And you want to specify. So the answer to this type of question for Hamza to ta'yin is not going to be na'am or la, but rather it has to be a specific answer. Are you a doctor or engineer? The answer will be, I am a doctor, or the answer will be, I am an engineer. You can't say na'am wala. You have to give a specific answer. Okay? So this is the first thing, that this hamza here is used to ask a question where you want to specify, you want to be specific. Is it this or that? So this, the word am here is used in this type of question, an interrogative question with hamza, hamza at-ta'yin. Okay, so after this, the other thing that I want to mention here is note that the two choices come behind, immediately behind the Hamza, or immediately after the M. Okay, at-tabibun anta, am muhandisun. Okay, so tabib is one choice, muhandis is the other choice. They have to come immediately behind the Hamza and the conjunction, the harf, atf, am. Yani, M is a conjunction, like waw, or fa, or thumma, or aw, or imma, or bel, or la, and so on. These are conjunctions. Okay, and a conjunction normally joins two things together. It joins something before it to something after it. Okay, so here, yani, M is used to join these two aspects of the question, tabib or muhandis. But the important point here is that the first choice has to come immediately after Hamza, and the second choice has to come immediately after muhandis. So you see the in the second sentence, is he from France or Germany? The first choice is min Faransa, and the second choice is min Almania. Is he from France or is he from Almania? The first choice comes immediately after Hamza. The second choice comes immediately after Almania. Other words in the sentence like huwa and anta, yani, will have to follow the choices, not ahead of the choices. Okay? The third one, abilalan ra'aita, was it Bilal that you saw? Am Hamidan, or was it Hamid? Notice that the choice here is either Bilal or Hamid. Bilal comes immediately after Hamza, and Hamid comes immediately after Am. If you turn the page, to page 3, at the top of the page, it says, note that the particle Hamza precedes one of the two things. Yani, one of the two things about which the question is asked. One of the choices. One of the two things about which the question is asked. And Am precedes the other. An M precedes the other. So it is wrong to say anta mudarris, because anta is not a choice. The choice is mudarris or tabib. It is wrong to say adhahabta ila Mecca am Judda, because dhahabta is not a choice. Ila Mecca or ila Judda is the choice. Okay? So it is wrong to say anta mudarrisun am talibun. The correct construction is mudarrisun anta, because mudarris is a choice. Am talibun. Yani, adhahabta ila Mecca is wrong. You say, a ila Mekkata dhahabta. Am ila Juddata. Yani, was it to Mecca or was it to Judda that you dhahabta went? Did you go to Mecca or Judda? Here, when you have two choices, the first choice has to come after Hamzat al-Istifham, and the second choice after Am. So you have A ila Makkah, Am ila Jeddah. Am mudarrisun, Am talibun. In any other words, have to follow them. So I hope that this is clear. The last point we want to say about Am, in a non-interrogative sentence, yani a sentence that's not a question, Aw is used for the meaning of or. For example, you say, خُذْ هَذَا أَوْ ذَاكَ, take this or that. In this kind of sentence, it's not an interrogative sentence. Instead of am, we use aw. Okay, both of them mean or, but am is used in an interrogative sentence with hamzatu ta'ayin, and aw is used in a yani non-interrogative sentence. خُذْ هَذَا أَوْ ذَاكَ, take this or that. Second example, رَأَيْتُ ثَلَاثَةً أَوْ أَرْبَعَةً, I saw three or four. This is not a question. Okay, it's a non-interrogative sentence, so we're using aw here. Kharaja Bilalun aw Hamidun. Bilal or Hamid went out. Again, aw is used in the non-interrogative sentence, and am is used in the interrogative sentence. There are some further details concerning this, yani where aw can sometimes be used in an interrogative sentence with hell, but we'll study that later on. For now, basically, we want to say aw is used in a non-interrogative sentence, and am is used in an interrogative sentence with hamza, yani that the hamza ta'ayin that's used to give specification, a specific answer, not just yes or no. This particular point with am has to be studied carefully. Look at the examples carefully and make sure you note that when there are two choices, one should immediately follow hamza and the other one should immediately follow am, and any other words should follow them, not before them. The choices, you must begin with the choices. Okay, point number five are the two numbers, mi'atun, 100, and alfun, 1,000. Note that in mi'atun, the aleph is not pronounced. Yani mim, aleph, that aleph is not pronounced. It is pronounced, mim, hamza, ta, marbuta, as though there is no aleph there. In certain countries, it is also written like this, yani without the aleph. So this is just in terms of the way the word is written. It's written with an aleph generally, but that aleph is not pronounced. In some countries, they just got rid of the aleph, so there's no confusion about it. After these two numbers, the ma'adud is singular majroor. For example, if you wanted to say 100 books, you say mi'atu kitabin, not mi'atu kutub. Yani in other words, the ma'adud for mi'a, even though you're talking about 100 books in English, in Arabic, the ma'adud is going to be singular, kitabin. It's going to be singular, and it's going to be majroor. It's majroor because this is an idafa construction. 100 of books. Yani 100 books in Arabic, mi'atu kitabin. Kitabin. Singular, mufrad, majroor. Yani accusative case. The same thing with alf. You say 1,000 riyals, it's an idafa construction. Alfu riyalin. And the ma'adud, the thing being counted, is going to be mudhaf ilayhi majroor. Another example they gave us, hadha at-talfazu bi alfi riyalin. Here, alfi is majroor. Hadha at-talfazu bi alfi riyalin. Here, alf is majroor because of the preposition bi. Okay, in this sentence, we see that alf is majroor. So that means that mi and alf, it's not they're not always going to be marfoon. They could be marfoon, they could be majroor, they could be mansoob, depending on their position or function in the sentence. But what is going to be the same all the time is that the ma'adud, the thing being counted with mi and alf, is always going to be singular, mufrad, and it's always going to be majroor, because it's going to be mudhaf ilayhi majroor. Also, finally, they said mi'a and alf have the same form with the feminine ma'adud. They have the same form. Yani they just showed us with the masculine ma'adud, mi'atu kitabin, alfu riyalin. But with the feminine ma'adud, they remain as mi'atu and alfu. They don't change. Yani because of the ma'adud being masculine or feminine. So you say alfu muslimatin and mi'atu talibatin. So even when the ma'adud muslima is feminine or talibatun is feminine, yani it doesn't matter, alf and mia remain in their standard form. So alf doesn't have a feminine form, and mia doesn't have a masculine form. It's used the same way, no matter if the ma'adud is masculine or feminine. So what you need to know about al-famiyya is that they are used in an idafa construction. So the word following it, the ma'adud, the thing being counted, is always going to be mudaf ilayhi majrur, and it's also going to be singular. Even though you're saying 100 books and 1,000 books, in English that's plural, but in Arabic when you use the singular for the ma'adud. The last point of this lesson is ghalin, which means expensive. Point number 6, ghalin, it means expensive. For example, they give us, هذا الكتاب غالٍ. This book is expensive. This book is expensive. Here, غالٍ is not مجرور, even though it has كسرتين. غالٍ. But it's not مجرور. It is مرفوع. Its actual form, يعني its original form, is غاليٌ. 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 The letter يا in غاليٌ along with its dhamma has been omitted, and the noon of the tanween, ghaliyun, the noon of the tanween has been transferred to the preceding letter, the lam in ghali. When the ya is omitted and its dhamma is omitted, the noon of the tanween of ghaliyun, that noon is transferred to the preceding letter, the letter lam. Okay. So when it's transferred to the letter lam, which has kasra, so it became ghalin. It became ghalin. Okay, this is a special rule. It's a special type of word. Yani, it's called the ism manqus, and we're going to study that in level 3. But for now, what you need to know is, don't be, yani, confused. In this sentence, هذا الكتاب غالٍ, هذا is the مبتدأ. Al-kitabu is the bedal, so it has to be marfoon, like the mubtada. And ghalin is the khabar. And the khabar is always marfoon, but we don't see a dhamma here, because this word is a special type of word. Its form is changed if it loses its alif lam. Yani, originally it's al-ghaliyu, but when it loses the alif lam, then it loses the letter ya, and it loses its vowel. But the noon of the tanween, yani from ghaliyun, the noon of the tanween is transferred if it doesn't have alif lam. Yani the originally had the kitab ghaliyun, yani since it doesn't have alif lam, it loses the ya and its vowel dhamma. But the noon from the tanween is transferred to the kasra of ghaliyun. It's transferred to the kasra and it became ghalin. So this is a special type of word. We're going to talk about it in detail in the future. But what is important here, if you see this type of word, you have to learn them as we study them until you learn the full rules concerning them. If you learn that this word is an ism manqus, it's a special type of word, then know, if it doesn't have alif lam, it's going to lose that ya at the end of the word. It's going to lose that ya, and it's going to lose its vowel, and then the last letter before the ya that remains is going to take an extra fatha, so it became tanween, ghalin. Okay, so the rule concerning this ism manqus, we're going to study in detail. This is a type of word that has its last letter is a ya that's preceded by a kasra. Okay, the last letter is a ya, like al-ghali, or al-qadi, or al-wadi. Okay, it's a word that ends with ya. And that ya is preceded by, on the letter before the last letter ya, is preceded by a kasra. That ya is going to be removed if the alif lam is removed. So al-ghaliyu became ghalin, and al-qadiyu became qadin. This tanween in ghalin and qadin is known as tanween iwad. That is, iwad means bedal, yani it's a substitute for the ya that has been omitted. The details of this we'll learn later. What is important now is just to try to recognize these words as you learn them. They gave you some examples on the next page. Yani, on page 4, they gave us muhamin, a lawyer, which originally its form was muhamiyun, but the ya is omitted, and then the meme with kasr becomes muhamin. For example, a sentence, Ana muhamin, I am a lawyer. Ana is the mubtada, yani mabniyun, in the place where it should be, marfu'un. And muhamin is the khabar, and the khabar is marfu'un, but because it's a special type of word, we don't see the dhamma. Another example is qadin, a judge, for what originally its form was qadiyun, but when it loses alif lam, the ya is also omitted, so it becomes qadin, yani the kasra on the last letter before the ya takes tanween. So in a sentence, abi qadin, my father is a judge. Abi is the mubtada, qadin is the khabar. We don't see its dhamma. This is a special type of i'rab. Inshallah, again, we'll study it in the level 3. The last example, wadin, a valley, for wadiyun. For example, hadha wadin, this is a valley. Hadha is the mubtada, wadin is the khabar. And again, it has a special i'rab. Wadin became wadin because because when it loses alif lam, it loses that ya, which is always the last. This type of word always has ya as the last letter, and that ya is preceded by kasra. So when it loses the ya, that kasra takes it becomes a tanween. So wadiyun became wadin, and qadiyun became qadin, and muhamiyun became muhamin. Okay, so this is a word, inshallah, that we'll study in detail in the future. For now, it's sufficient just to know that there are some special types of words. Even when they are marfu'un, they may look like they are majrur. So you have to pay attention to that in terms of i'rab. This is the end of the English key. What follows on the bottom of page 4 is the vocabulary words. We'll just go through them quickly. Since they are separated on 2 pages, so I'm going to look at them as one right-hand column. I'm going to go straight down from page 4 to page 5, and then I'll go to the left-hand column, back to page 4, and go down to page 5. So I'm going to go on the right column first. Mi'atun means 100. Alfun means 1,000. Rubiyatun means a rupee. On page 5, on right column, Safhatun means a page. Najihun means one who has passed the examination. Ghalin means expensive. Kum means the sleeve of a shirt or a coat or a jacket. On the left column, back to page 4, Dhakiyun means intelligent. Ghabiyun is the opposite. It means stupid, unintelligent. Khulukun means manners. Going to page 5, left column, Mutazawijun means married, the opposite. Azabun means unmarried. Yahudiyun means a Jew, an individual single Jewish person. Yahud means the Jews as a people. Ism jins. Mu'ajamun means a dictionary. And dularun means a dollar. Okay, this is the end of the key and the vocabulary. And what actually remains is the Arabic text at the beginning of the lesson. I wanted to take a look at that, just so that, even though the main thing that we want to cover here is actually the vocabulary and the grammar, but we also want to look at the Arabic text just to see some of these words in their context, and also to look at some of the grammar in context. Okay, so we're going to read through this text in the time that remains, and we're going to try to pay attention to the use of the grammatical points of this lesson, the 6 points. We'll see wherever we see them at. And also we want to look at any of the vocabulary that may come in the text here. Okay, so actually in this text there's not a lot of the new vocabulary used, maybe only like 5 words, but primarily we want to look for the grammatical points. Inna and la'alla and dhu and am and mia and alf and ghalin. Okay, so most importantly we want to see am, and we want to see dhu, and we want to see inna, and we want to see la'alla. Okay, so let's read from page 5 of the Arabic text of the book, Ad-Darsu al-Awwalu. Hashim says, As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And he tried to translate this in writing, or at least orally, for homework during the week. Read it a few times over. Try to look for the new words and for the grammatical points to see how they are used in context. Al-Mudarris says, Wa alaykum as-salamu wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yani, peace be upon you and the mercy of Allah and His blessings. And the response is, and upon you be the peace and the mercy of Allah and His blessings. Hashim says, Kayfa haluka ya ustadhu? meaning, how is your condition, or how are you, O teacher? لَعَلَّكَ بِخَيْرٍ. Here's the word from the grammar, right? لَعَلَّكَ بِخَيْرٍ. Yani, it is hoped, or I hope that you are well, that you are fine. So the original sentence would have been here before لَعَلَّ, it would have been أَنْتَ بِخَيْرٍ. But when you use لَعَلَّ, أَنْتَ has to change to the mansub form, so it became لَعَلَّكَ بِخَيْرٍ. So ka takes the place of أَنْتَ. أَنْتَ بِخَيْرٍ, لَعَلَّكَ بِخَيْرٍ. Yani, how is your condition, O teacher? I hope that you are fine. Yani, the meaning here is hope, taraji, not ishfaq, because he is not saying, how are you, O teacher? Yani, I fear that you are doing well. I don't fear that you are doing well. I hope that you are doing well. The teacher says, Alhamdulillah. Yani, how am I? Alhamdulillah. Yani, I am well, Alhamdulillah. وَكَيْفَ حَالُكَ أَنْتَ يَا هَاشِمُ. And how are you, O Hashim? Here, أَنْتَ is used for emphasis, because أَنْتَ and ka in حَالُكَ have the same meaning. So حَالُكَ is the attached form of the pronoun, and أَنْتَ is the unattached form of the pronoun. كَيْفَ حَالُكَ أَنْتَ. That's for emphasis. How are you, O Hashim? أَنَا أُحِبُّكَ. The teacher goes on to say, أَنَا أُحِبُّكَ كَثِيرًا يَا هَاشِمُ. I love you very much, O Hashim. إِنَّكَ طَالِبٌ ذَكِيٌ وَمُجْتَحِدٌ وَذُو خُلُقٍ. إِنَّكَ, again, this is from the grammar, إِنَّ, yani the original sentence is أَنْتَ طَالِبٌ ذَكِيٌ مُجْتَحِدٌ. أَنْتَ is replaced here after إِنَّ with كَ. إِنَّكَ طَالِبٌ ذَكِيٌ وَمُجْتَحِدٌ وَذُو خُلُقٍ, meaning, indeed, verily, certainly, definitely, no doubt, you are a طالبٌ ذَكِيٌ, intelligent student. مُجْتَهِدٌ, hard-working, diligent student. وَذُو خُلُقٍ, yani well-mannered student, possessing good manners. أَمِنْ بَكِسْتَانَ أَنْتَ أَمْ مِنَ الْهِنْدِ يَا حَاشِمُ. The meaning, are you from Pakistan or from India, O Hashim? Here we have the word M, right? We said that it's used in an interrogative question where we have a choice between two things. The first choice comes after Hamza. The second choice comes after M. The first choice is Min Pakistan. The second choice is Min Al-Hind. Are you from Pakistan or are you from India? Am Min Pakistan, that's the first choice. Anta, are you from Pakistan? Am Min Al-Hind or from India, Ya Hashimu. Okay, so again, am is used in an interrogative statement, interrogative question, where you're asking about two things and you want to specify one or the other. Are you from Pakistan or are you from India? Hashim says, Inni min al-Hind. Indeed or verily, I am from India. Here we want to note that Inni has two forms. You can say Inni or Innani. Just like in the plural, you can say Inna or Innana. We mentioned that in the note when we went over this particular point in the English key. Okay, that it has two forms. That's on page 2 of the English key. Inni or Innani min al-Hind. The teacher says, وَزَمِيلُكَ الَّذِي خَرَجَ مَعَكَ الْآنَ مِنَ الْفَصْلِ. And your classmate, وَزَمِيلُكَ, and your classmate, الَّذِي هُو خَرَجَ مَعَكَ الْآنَ مِنَ الْفَصْلِ, who just went out of the classroom just now with you. What about your friend who just went out of the classroom with you? أَهُوَ أَيْضًا مِنَ الْهِنْدِ, is he also from India? Hashim says, no. لَا إِنَّهُ مِنْ بَكِسْتَانَ. Here we have إِنَّ again. The original form of this sentence before إِنَّ would have been هُوَ مِنْ, لَا هُوَ من باكستان, هو. But when you use إنّا, you have to change the pronoun from the marfu'un form هو to the mansub form هو, as we saw in exercise number 3 on page 7 of this lesson. Okay, is he also, yani your friend, is he also from India? لا, إنّهُ, indeed, verily, he is from Pakistan. Notice that Pakistan is ممنوع من الصرف. And therefore, even though it's following the preposition min, Yani, we say it's majrur, but the sign that it's majrur is fatah. The teacher says, Inna sa'ataka jamilatun ya jamilatun ya Hashimu. Inna sa'ataka jamilatun ya Hashimu. Indeed, your watch is beautiful, O Hashim. Here we note, yani sa'ataka, yani sa'ata is mansub with fatha because it's ism inna. And jamilatun is khabaru inna, marfu'un. Amin al-yabani hiya, yani your watch, your beautiful watch, amin al-yabani hiya, is it from Japan, Hashim? La, innaha min al-hind. No, indeed, it is from India. Again, the original sentence would have been without inna, la, hiya min al-hind. But hiya is replaced with ha after the introduction of inna. The mansub form of hiya is ha, innaha. Indeed, it, hiya, min al-hind. The teacher says, أغاليتن, أغاليتن, hiya, أم رخيصتن. Is it expensive, or is it inexpensive, or cheap? Again, this is a question. M is used in an interrogative, where there are two choices, and you have to specify which one. The first choice immediately comes after Hamza, the second choice immediately comes after M. The choices are, expensive, yani ghaliya, or rakhis, inexpensive. Aghaliyatun, that's the first choice here. Am rakhisatun, is it expensive or inexpensive? Hashim says, innaha rakhisatun jiddan. Indeed, it is inexpensive, very inexpensive. Innaha, yani hiya rakhisatun, innaha rakhisatun jiddan. Innaha bi miyati rubiyatin faqat. Indeed, it costs 100 rupees only, faqad. Innaha, yani hiya, the watch, yani hiya bi miyati rubiya. Yani hiya, when inna is introduced, hiya becomes ha. Innaha bi, it costs miyati 100 rubiya, rupees, faqad. Rupees is a currency in India, Pakistan. The teacher says, last line on this page, Kam akhan laka, ya Hashimu. How many brothers do you have, O Hashim? Remember, the tamyiz of kam is always going to be singular mansub, mufrad mansub. Kam akhan. Even though in English you say how many brothers, but in Arabic the tamyiz of kam is going to be singular. And again, when we're asking about people, we don't say indaka, we say laka. Kam akhan laka, ya Hashimu. How many brothers do you have, O Hashim? We turn to page 6. Top of the page, Hashim says, Li thalathatu ikhwatin. Li thalathatu ikhwatin. I have 3 brothers. Remember, the numbers from 3 to 10. The number comes first as the mudaf, and the ma'adud follows it as the mudaf ilayhi. And the ma'adud for the numbers from 3 to 10 is always going to be mudaf ilayhi majrur and plural. Li thalathatu ikhwatun. Unlike the numbers 101,000, the mudaf ilayhi, the ma'adud mudaf ilayhi, is going to be majrur, but it's going to be singular. For the numbers from 3 to 10, it's going to be majrur and plural. Li thalathatu ikhwatin. I have 3 brothers. The teacher. Atullabun hum. Are they students? Tullab is on the pattern of fu'al. Yani, broken plural pattern, fu'al. Atullabun hum. Are they students? Hashim, la, innahum tujjarun. No, indeed, they are merchants. Tujjar is also a broken plural pattern on the pattern of fu'al, like tullab. Fu'al, tujjar. Innahum tujjarun. Yani, without inna, the original sentence would have been, yani, hum tujjar. After inna, we have innahum. Yani, the mansub form and the marfu'un form for hum and hunna is the same. It doesn't change. Unlike the other ones, ka becomes anta and ki becomes anti. Here, hum is used in the marfu'un form and the mansub form. No, they are merchants. Teacher says, wakam ukhtan laka. And how many sisters do you have? Again, note, he didn't say kam ukhtan indaka. Kam ukhtan laka. How many sisters do you have? And again, the tamyiz of kam is singular and mansub ukhtan. Hashim says, li arba'u akhawatin. I have 4 sisters. Again, the numbers from 3 to 10, the ma'adud is going to be mudawfun ilayhi majrur, and it's going to be plural. And also the adad and the ma'adud are opposite in gender. So arba'u is masculine number with akhawatin, feminine, ma'adud, and previously we had thalathatu ikhwatin, thalathatu is feminine number with ikhwa, masculine, ma'adud. Ikhwa, the plural of akh, it's masculine. So the number and the thing being counted, the adad and ma'adud are opposite in gender. I have four sisters. The teacher says, afil hindi hunna al-ana, are they in India now? Are they right now in India? Hashim says, la inna hunna huna bil madinati al munawwarati ma'a abi wa ummi. No, indeed they are here in Medina with my father and my mother. Again, the two pronouns hum and hunna, third person, masculine and feminine plurals, are the same in the mansub form and the marfu form, so they don't change. Innahunna, innahunna huna. Indeed, they are here. Bil Medina and Nabawiyya. And in the book it says Munawwara, but we prefer to use the description which is from the Sunnah, Al Medina and Nabawiyya. Not Munawwara, because of the origins of this word Munawwara that's based in Sufism, even though it's in common usage today. The teacher says, أَطَالِبَاتٌ هُنَّ أَطَالِبَاتٌ هُنَّ, are they students, yani female students? Hashim says, لَا إِنَّهُنَّ مُدَرِّسَاتٌ بِالْمَدْرَسَةِ الثَّانَوِيَّةِ. No, indeed, they are teachers, female teachers, in the madrasa al-thanawiyya, yani the high school or secondary school. And again, inna here is used with hunna, and hunna, its form doesn't change. Okay, this is the I'll go back just briefly and looking at this Arabic text and just note, yani from the rules that we saw in this lesson in the vocabulary, we saw la'alla being used, we saw inna being used, we saw m being used, we saw the numbers mia, or the number mia, and we saw some other numbers, yani from 3 to 10. From vocabulary words, we saw the word dhakiyun, which is the opposite of, from the vocabulary words, we didn't have it in this reading, but the opposite of dhakiyun is what? Ghabiyun. And we also had yani khuluq, which means character or manners. And we also had yani ghaliya, yani ghaliya, we had the word ghalin in the vocabulary. Ghalin, its feminine form is ghaliya. And we also had, yani as I mentioned, mia. Mia, we had in the vocabulary mia and alf. Here we have mia and rubiya. Yani rubiya is also from the vocabulary. So these are some of the vocabulary words and the grammatical points that we have seen, yani in this lesson. Inna we saw, la'alla we saw, Dhu we saw, M we saw, Mia we saw, we didn't see Alf, and Ghalin we saw its feminine form, Ghaliya. As far as the other vocabulary words, it is extremely important to try to memorize as many of the vocabulary words as possible now, so that when we go into the full study of Medina Book 2, inshallah, you won't have the burden of trying to memorize so many vocabulary words with every lesson. You will already be acquainted and familiar with them, and hopefully having memorized most of them, if not all of them. And likewise, inshallah, our intent is that we introduce you and acquaint you with the grammar of Medina Book 2, at least the first half of the book, before we go into the study of Medina Book 2, so that you'll be more well prepared and feeling more comfortable and confident in that you will already be familiar with much of the grammar, and perhaps, yani, you find the study of Medina Book 2, unlike other people who have found it, finding it very, very difficult. Inshallah, hopefully you'll find it easy, or much easier, and therefore more enjoyable. This is what we wanted to do for today. I hope, inshallah, that everybody who is doing Medina Book 2 preview, they haven't studied Medina Book 2 before, I hope this preview has been somewhat helpful in acquainting you with, and making you familiar with, and more comfortable with the vocabulary and the grammar for this first lesson. And inshallah, hopefully, if you study with us the full study of Medina Book 2 in the future, you'll find that this preparation or this preview, inshallah, will have been helpful, by the permission of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to accept from me and from you whatever deeds of good we're offering for His sake alone, in accordance with the sunnah of His Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. We ask Allah to pardon our shortcomings, our mistakes and errors, and we ask Him to elevate our station, and He multiply our good deeds, and elevate our station and status with Him in this world and in the next life. We ask Him to keep us firm upon Sirat al-Mustaqim, and that He grant us ease from our difficulty, that He heal our sick, and that He grant relief to those who are suffering under difficulties and hardship. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.